call the City of Franklin's Plan Commission to order. Mr. Fuchs, please take the roll.
Commissioner Knipple?
Here.
Commissioner Ritter?
Here.
Commissioner Haley?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Commissioner Bennett?
Here.
Alderman Schmidt?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler?
Here.
Please rise, join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next item on the agenda is the regular meeting of Thursday, January 9th. So any questions, comments? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
So moved and seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. I'll turn to item three, public hearings and business items. Item A, OMS Properties, LLC, truck repair and towing business. Mr. Heedle, I forgot your name. I only spent, about half the day with you today.
Yep. Yes. As you mentioned, this is a special use, and we'll have a public hearing in a moment. A brief introduction I could give, and the applicants are here as well if the Plan Commission has any questions. This is an existing building, an existing site. It's currently vacant. They wish to use it for, and the property is zone limited industrial. They wish to use it for a towing and truck repair business. They would also be selling used cars, those cars that they, or vehicles they tow, that aren't picked up within a certain amount of time, they would sell. They also would be storing their trucks on site, and that also is requires a special use approval as part of this application. So, and then they also plan to phase in some additional changes on the site. So at first, they would be running the tow truck operation. They would be fencing in an area where the vehicles that they tow would be stored. Those that aren't picked up with a certain amount of time would be moved up front, I believe, and would be available for sale. They will have customer parking on the north and west side of the building. They will have a 6-foot chain link fence to screen in these areas where they're towing in the vehicles. They'll have their vehicles and customer park, their employee parking in the back. But in the future, they would like to have a building addition. They would put a larger fence. It's possible that there would be more parking in the back. That larger fence would also eventually need a Plan Commission approval at some point. At this point in time, staff is recommending approval with a number of conditions. Just generically, I'd like to mention that many of those conditions, staff is requiring what we believe is proportionate to what they're asking for. So, for instance, we're asking, the parking lot is in pretty bad shape. We'd only be asking to repair the parts of the parking lot that they use. They won't be adding any additional impervious surface at first, so we're not asking for the full UDO requirement of landscaping, for instance. But we can get into that in more detail later if the Plan Commission wishes.
Okay. And you have a public notice to read?
Yes.
Notice is hereby given that the Plan Commission of the City of Franklin will conduct a public hearing on Thursday, January 23rd, 2014 at 7 p.m. or as soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in the Common Council Chambers of the Franklin City Hall, 9229 West Loomis Road, Franklin, Wisconsin, 53132, to hear public comment regarding an application by OMS Properties, LLC for a special use under standard industrial classification title numbers 7521, Automobile Parking, 7538, General Automotive Repair Shop, 7549, Automotive Services, not elsewhere classified, and 5511, new and used car dealers, to allow for a truck repair and towing business use, and overnight truck parking of vehicles exceeding 8,000 pounds manufactured gross vehicle weight, which requires special use approval per section 15-5.0202G3 of the Unified Development Ordinance upon property zoned M1 Limited Industrial District and C1 Conservancy District, located at 11113 West Forest Home Avenue.
Mr. Deedle?
I did forget to mention one thing. We did receive two letters from adjacent property owners on the residential side of the street expressing concerns and objection to this request.
Okay, that's from Catherine O'Keefe and Andrew and Marcia Watko?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And all the commissioners have those letters in front of them?
I believe so.
All right. I'm going to open, unless there's comments or suggestions from plan commissioners, I'm going to open up item 3A for public hearing. We've had the public notice. Anyone wishing to speak during the public hearing regarding item 3A, OMS Properties LLC? Is there anyone during the public hearing wishing to speak concerning item 3A, OMS Properties LLC, truck repair and towing business? If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
I'm Jeff Pillar, and I live at 1633 Eldoro Drive in Waukesha. I guess I just wanted to make some comments. Joel did a pretty good job describing what we wanted to do. We're not going to really have a car dealer, though. You know, when you impound vehicles, you keep them for so long, people don't redeem them. We need to obtain a dealer's license so we can sell them at auction. And, you know, if there was a nice vehicle, we might put it up on the property for sale. Along the street, there's a, down the street, the Hill Park Auto, they have a dealer's license. They might have like three or four vehicles along the side of their property. And that's about all we'd probably be doing on the car dealer side. But where we are in Hales Corners right now, the way we're zoned, they won't grant us a car dealer at all, or a dealer's license. And it's been really hard because we have a lot of cars that we can't get rid of because we don't have a dealer's license. And I guess I haven't really been to one of these. Do you guys have questions for us that I can answer?
Yes, Mr. Bennett.
Yeah, where are you located in Hill Park?
It's Pillars Auto Repair. It's 11510 West Janesville Road. It's like, you know, 116th in Janesville, the library, where it was an old two-bay service station, and my father added on to it 5 or 6 years ago. And we were doing really good there up until like a year ago. And we just, our business has grown so much. We are like, we're just overpacking the parking lot. It's, you know, it's just, it's way too much there. It makes us look like hoarders because we got this little parking lot that we're trying to run two businesses out of.
Is that an old filling station there?
Yep.
Yeah. Not sure what it was actually.
Pure Oil, I worked there.
You worked there?
Yeah.
Was it with Clem or?
Before Clem.
Okay.
Thatcher Hills.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry.
I'm older than that.
So, and I know there's a couple.
Was that pre gasoline?
Pretty close.
Got stables.
Streetcars.
So, you know, the property, it's pretty run down. You know, and there is, you know, I saw those two letters, and, you know, they have good reason to be concerned. You know, they don't want this. You know, there's a bad reputation for towing businesses, you know, especially in the city. It's like they're the dirty, grungy people that we tow your car, and now you have to pay us $400 to get it back. A lot of people hate us. That's not really what we do. I shouldn't say that. I mean, we want to be, like, the pretty-looking towing business. We don't want to be those grungy people in the city. You know, that's why being in the suburbs, you know, especially Franklin, we really want to be that high-line towing business, and that's really what I'm striving for, especially with the addition on the building. We really want it to actually look nice, you know, and be very presentable. And there's, I'm not sure if anyone's been by there, but there's, like, the top lot where the first building is, it's at street level. It's actually high, and the whole property, like, slopes down a little more than, like, one story. I'd probably say from the top level to the bottom, it's almost like a story and a half. So there's going to be a lot of noise. It's going to be shielded. You know, I don't think we're going to really cause any problems to the neighborhood. And, especially with the rundown building there now, I think we'd do good for the area, you know, making improvements to the area, actually.
Okay, now turn the TV on.
You know, I got a lot in my mind, too. I feel like maybe I might spit some more stuff out as we go on.
Well, I'm wondering if you could. I put one of the site plans out that shows where our fence is supposed to be in the future.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you could just elaborate a little bit on the timeline you have in mind and where the vehicles would be on site. Adding on to your point that you were, I think, just making about the change in elevation on the site, what would the public see? The drawing that we have there shows a proposed fence at some point in the future that was going to be essentially not a see-through fence. So,
yeah.
Again, we've got a couple of letters expressing some concerns. Just wondering if you could kind of elaborate on how the concerns that have been addressed here, and I don't know if you've seen the letters or not, but how the concerns that have been addressed here, how will a fence affect that? What would be in front of the proposed fence? That sort of thing. And especially in terms of, it sounds like you're pretty intensive use of your current site. Is this going to shift to just a pretty intensive unit use of this site? And if so, will that be screened from the view of the neighbors across the street? Those kinds of questions. So if you could just, and feel free to use that to kind of illustrate.
Absolutely. And
what's
kind of like, I might like pause, maybe help me out, ask me some questions.
Camera's right behind you, so you might want to
sit
down.
Sorry, I keep on looking at that one. It's the different map.
You want to go over there or just
point?
Sure.
Might be better to go over there. Everybody can see that.
Oh, just down here? Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Okay. So, like, right at first, because we're like a growing business, and obviously with this purchase, funds are going to be limited at first. So we're going to, go to the elevation first. You know, this is the street. This is all, I'd say the top parking lot is at street level, and it kind of like curves off here. There's like a, it's like a ditch for water, sewer, or
stormwater,
yeah, right here. So it kind of like curves off, and it kind of like comes in kind of like right here. So at first, we won't really touch anything there, just dollar-wise, and there really won't be anything going on over here. Right now, we have a half acre, and we run, we have 5 service bays that we repair cars on 6 days a week, plus we do this towing operation on there with 6 trucks, and we pack all that in there. So really, for the first, I'd say, my best guess would be 2 years, we're going to be using this area here, you know, because the building will be shielding it, and we're going to put that 6-foot chain link fence between here and here to keep stored vehicles. We don't store a lot of vehicles right now, like on contrary towing businesses. You know, they tow vehicles for police departments. There's an accident, you tow your car and you store it. We don't do a whole lot of that right now, and one reason is because we don't have the place for it. So the number of vehicles we actually tow in and store is very minimal, so this will suffice for the first 2 years or so. The biggest part of our business is auto transport. There's an auto auction, 7 Mile Fair, up in 94. I think everyone's kind of familiar with it, the big Mannheim auction. So we go around the whole state of Wisconsin. We transport cars. We pick up the crash cars in Eau Claire, Superior, Green Bay, Wausau, and we bring them down here to the auto auction. That's probably 90% of our business. And with the purchase of this property, we want to, you know, partner up with police departments and do the normal towing, you know, private property impounds, you know, someone abandons a car, Walgreens. And we'd like to do that stuff because that's what really makes towing businesses successful. And I'd say before we started doing that, when the time was ready, you know, before we outgrew our little, you know, 3,000 square foot fenced in area here, you know, at the property line where it slopes down, which would be right along here, the idea would be to put in like an 8-foot fence. Probably, like in my mind, I have a vision of, you know, like a steel structure, like a pole barn or something, like kind of like that kind of siding. You know, maybe put up like a rock post with like that steel siding, like make a fence out of that. That's just like the first thing that comes to my mind. Because if the building were to be redone, you could run that same siding on the building. And there'd be some, because obviously the trucks have to get from the top to the bottom, so there'd be some kind of sliding door so the trucks can drive down. time. We would want to utilize the whole space for car storage and truck parking. You know, there's some kind of like rundown fences like here, and here, and there might be like 20 feet of fence, and there might be an opening. I mean, all that would have to get filled in. And, you know, as much as the public doesn't want to be, you know, I don't know how to say it, they don't want the eyesore of a towing business, we don't want people to see what we have in there either. You know, just because, like last night, we had someone steal something off of one of our tow trucks. It cost us $944. It's a pain in the butt. I don't want anyone get into my lot. I mean, like Fortress, kind of. And so, I don't know, does that answer your question, kind of? Sorry.
Well, and I'll get to staff on this just in terms of what would it be, in terms of how you would utilize until the point where you build that fence, your expectation would be that you're going to keep what? Okay, if you're going to use this enclosed area for vehicles
for the small amount of cars we actually tow.
What else will be going on out here in this area?
Probably not a whole lot of anything. You know, for the small amount of cars that we have in there, obviously people will come in and park, and you know they come in and pay for it, then they can redeem their car. There might be some truck traffic in, truck traffic out. If there was maybe a shift change, so we don't have it blotted up and, you know, a bunch of, like, truck traffic here, maybe day shift might load up a truck at, I'll give you an example, maybe like 4:30, pull it out here and wait till night shift comes in at 5, and then maybe he'd hop in and then go out. I mean, besides that, it's kind of like a open area of kind of nothing, to tell you the truth.
Would you be willing to live with a restriction that limited you to storage of vehicles here and in this area here behind the existing building, but not out here until such time as the fence is built? Would that be unreasonable for you?
No, not at all. And I wouldn't want to put anything out there. You know, we actually, when we first started everything with Nick and the planning department, we had so many cars over at the pillars. We actually, some cars that have run and drive have keys that, like, are ours that we've possessed, and some extra employee cars. We actually, maybe if that's what you're talking, we parked a couple there, and I didn't know we couldn't do that, and you guys sent us an email. I mean, we moved them, but that was just because it's snowing, and, you know, we're keeping the property clean, so hopefully when everything goes good, we don't have, like, this much ice to try to plow through so our trucks can get through. So I plowed it, and then the owner said, hey, you're plowing my lot, if you want to, you can park some cars there. I was like, sweet, I really need a place to park some cars. But yeah, when we're in there, this probably wouldn't be used for a whole lot of anything besides, maybe, like I said, staging. It's kind of like, you know, useless space right now. And, you know, a lot of our stuff will stay just in this area until that fence goes up.
The other concern, or at least, and others may have concerns, but you would, as I recall, the information, you would like to go to 24-hour operation at some point?
Yes.
Would you be comfortable with limiting the late night and overnight stuff to just bringing in towed vehicles and then limiting the rest of the activity to a more conventional daytime schedule?
Well, and you know, that's kind of how it would be. You know, right now I put in the hours of like 7 to 3, and really it's like when I think about it, there's a... Right, so our transport trucks, they're big trucks. Think of like a Penske, like the biggest Penske box truck you can think of. And you might have seen them, you don't see a lot of these trucks around. It's a big straight truck. There's one above the driver, two on the bed. You can lift up the front one. We have four of those trucks. And those guys, depending on where they're going, if it's snowing, how the weather is, they might leave our lot. I got one guy that leaves at like 5:30. There's another guy that leaves between like 6 and 7. And the other two are usually leaving around 8. And that's like the only locomotion you have in the morning until the office opens, which generally I'm going to get there maybe in the 7 o'clock range. And, you know, night. You know, all the big circus stuff, you know, all the day-to-day stuff probably ends between 6 and 8. And then after that, it might be, you know, one of our transport trucks coming in, or then right now we use a night shift. So if those transport trucks, you know, you have hours of operation, you have to be on the road, they can drive 13 hours. He doesn't have time to go down to Mannheim, dog auction, and come back. So our night shift comes in, and he'll drive a truck down to the auction and come back. But it's not like there's people moving around. It really wouldn't be much more than traffic on the road, especially because that hill, you know, it's not like they're blaring air horns. Especially when that fence goes up, I don't think we hear anything. Like right now, I wish I had a map of how we are, like pillars. I mean, like if our property, like if that was there, around the whole back is apartment complex and like condo, or not condos. There's a couple two families. Maybe there's one two family. There's two apartment complexes and a couple single families. And the only complaint we had was backup beepers. And we disconnected. Supposed to have them, but we don't want any problems. So we disconnect them back to the first. And we've been doing that in our little lot for 3 years now. I mean, it starts small, but it's going to get bigger. That's all that we've had about the 3 years.
Alderman Schmidt, and then Mr. Knippel.
This location that you're looking at, was this like the Gordon Wheel service? Along
no.
there, along Forest Home?
K&S Remodeling.
It's with K&S Remodeling.
Oh, okay. And is there a, have you looked into, I see the fire department had some concerns about a sprinkler system. Have you looked into what it would cost you if you
it
had
is,
to convert?
And that is one big hurdle I'm hoping we can overcome. It is very expensive. It's actually like project shutting down expensive. I only talked to one place, it's Simplex Grinnell. I gave him a call. He really didn't want to talk to us or talk to me unless I give him some money or he wanted to look at it. But a building like that, he said it's like 6 to 10 feet per square feet, the retrofit.
$6 to $10 per square foot.
What did I say? I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. Yeah, $6 to $10 per square foot. Purchasing this property for $250,000, and that's like it's half a meal. You know, you got $50,000 as a down payment, and you know, every dollar we get from this business, it just gets turned around into a deal to try to be successful. And I understand the concern, you know, with fire codes and stuff. And until we, because in the future we thought. It kind of stinks. There's this easement here, and then there's that C1 conservation area here. There's another sewer pipe. I was like, well, that would be cool. We could build a building here. That kind of got shut down. So then our thought was we could add on here. You have two truck bays. Might be about 70 feet deep. We could work on two trucks real comfortably. We're always fixing tow trucks. It's horrible. I wish all we had to do was tow cars in and fix them. Got to fix them ourselves. And
who owns the property now?
Patrick Neeson.
Okay.
Is his name. He bought it through a foreclosure. I think it's just kind of like a
bankruptcy
thing for him. Yeah.
Now, who was the party that went bankrupt?
I believe it was a guy. He owned a gas station and both.
Right.
And
because somebody brought up K&S Remodeling. It wasn't K&S Remodeling. So it's not under the ownership of Alderman Ken Skaronski. It hasn't been for some time, just to clear it.
I think about 8 years.
Yeah. Mr. Knippel?
Your operation on Janesville Road, the House Corners, that's on a very high visibility corner, and I go by there frequently, so I'm very familiar with it. And it's a typical garage set. never been anything that drew my eye.
Not even all the cars around
there. Well, having worked there, I knew it was a gas station. I knew it was a repair facility. But it was not out of the ordinary. So when you're right in saying you were just in a small area for what you want to do, and to get no complaints from the apartment building almost directly behind you within 50 feet, that's commended for doing that.
I mean, all the trucks, they have mufflers and stuff. And they're not that
often. When you decide to repair your trucks, that's just to repair your tow vehicles, or would that be repairing the things that you may get through towing?
Well, and you know, that's a good point, because, for example, we took possession of this Ford Explorer. It's a $4,000 vehicle, and it doesn't run. And if that was over here, I probably would want to bring it in and try to fix it so we can get more money out of it. And, you know, in the future, sorry, I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
What I'm looking for is possibly it's going to be an auto repair facility or just your personal repair, not personal repair, but your repair of vehicles that you end up owning or the trucks that you use to transport the vehicles that you take down to the auto wash. Is that basically what is going to happen in the future, or are there going to be other things that you might want
I'd
to
say
do?
Probably half of it would be ours. But, you know, our repair business, there is actually clients that come to us to try to get us to fix bigger equipment. And my dad's addition, on the back of our shop, we do have a bigger bay door. But it's only 12 feet by 12 feet. We get medium-sized trucks and wheel guards. And we repair them once in a while. But the idea, when we add on addition, we thought maybe squaring this off, you know, building a steel structure for those 2 bays. And I can't spend all day in there working on our stuff, so I'd employ probably 1 or 2 full-time technicians.
Okay.
And I would want to try to make some revenue out of that also.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not going to be like, you know, a Freightliner dealer, but there would be definitely some revenue there.
Okay. Because that, I think, affects what happens with the sprinkler system, is how much goes on in the auto repair in that truck repair in that facility. I thought I read that. The concerns from the fire department was how much was there if the vehicle stored inside with the potential for accidents inside. That was the reason for the sprinkler. That's what I was just getting at.
Sure.
How much of that is going to go on?
And, you know, we thought, I mean, like right now, it would be horrible if we had to install a sprinkler. I mean, it would like shut us down. And I want to be able to park vehicles inside too, especially like with this cold weather. Tow trucks don't like start in the cold weather. We're pushing our own stuff inside so we can heat stuff up to get it running and get it back outside. And we have a spot so we can park one truck inside. So when it's cold, we can park one truck inside. Right now, how this place is set up, we thought maybe we could get one truck. Well, we can get one truck in there for sure how it is. We might be able to squeeze two in there, possibly if we put smaller ones in there. And I would love to be able to do that.
Mr. Fowler, you have a question?
Yeah, I took a look at the site, and the site looks fairly vacant and unused at this point in time. So I want to make that point. So I know that the neighbors had concerns. I mean, you can see the part of that is covered with snow now, but it looks kind of unsightly in the spring. It's not covered with snow. But they talk about large trucks. And so I guess my question to you would be, when you do large truck repair, you're not talking about semi-cab coming in to be repaired.
Well,
or is that something you would be considering?
It would probably be like the tractor part. You
what's
know,
the tractor part?
Tractor and trailers would probably be too big. You know, like have those coming in as repairs on a daily basis. I'm not saying that there might not be one. I mean, if a guy is going down the road, he's like, hey, my tractor trailer, I have a brake locked up, can I get it in? It's like, well, I got no room. Or, you know, we have room. Like, yeah, bring it in. I would love to be able to do that. I think maybe what you're thinking is if there's going to be like a bunch of tractor trailers parked here, that's
it's not going to be the main portion of your business. It's going to be cab and tractor.
And I'm sure you've seen car haulers. You know, you've got a 9-10 car hauler with a tractor trailer. We've actually been looking into buying a couple of those. So it's probably something that if we were to get in here, you'd see those in our fleets. But they don't make money when they're on your lot. They make money when they're on the road. And a guy who drives a tractor trailer like that, he'll be out for 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
But they did have to be staged at that lot.
When it came in to get parked, you know, because...
But it would not be for, like, extended periods.
No, I mean, give me an example. Guy that drives a tractor trailer, car hauling, is a lot different than your normal tractor trailer guy, you know, moving freight around. Car hauler might be on the road for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. He might come home for 5 to 10 days, and then he might go back.
And the last question is kind of for staff and for the owner. It sounds like the fire alarm system has, I mean, you said recommend the installation of this fire system, the fire alarm and the sprinkler system. Is that required? Do they have to do the entire building? Can we work out an arrangement for the owner to do part of the building for the operation where he wants to store the vehicles? Or is that something that has to be done all at once? I guess that's a question.
I believe they're required to do the part where they store the vehicles. They probably would encourage the whole building, but it sounded to me as if they're going to require only the part that stores the vehicles.
No, that would be both system, the fire alarm system and the sprinkler system, or just one? Or
yes.
Both. They have to do both. And that's a requirement.
Yep.
That's okay. Mr. Bennett?
I got just a couple engineering questions. Excuse me. Or concerns, I guess I should say. Sure. Maybe I can show them on the camera the best. It shows up. North is up. But there is a storm sewer that runs through the site right here. Much better if I show it
there. You are.
That's a terrible picture.
Can you show it on the other thing, Jack? Can you show it on that on their plan?
No, that's GIS. There's a storm sewer that runs through the site that is a private storm sewer. But it serves, North is up, it serves all the way down to the southern end of the North Cape Industrial Park.
And where does it discharge?
And it discharges to a storm sewer that goes through the electric company's property and the Ewald property. And then there's a storm sewer that goes along the north line of Franklin and discharges into a storm sewer owned by the state as far as Highway 100. And that discharges it for the creek that just goes north of Culver's. One of some of my concerns.
Windmill Park Creek.
What?
Windmill
Park Creek? Okay. It's not Franklin, so I don't know its name. One of the concerns I have on the property.
We discharge to it.
Again, north is up. This is the building you're talking about. In through where the storm sewer is hydric soils, which are poor soils, especially for compression. And I'm a little concerned that if we have trucking on this storm sewer that really we don't know much about, it could be a concern. I guess if the owner is willing to take the responsibility, but I think the condition on this is that they would inspect the storm sewer, put a camera through it, and if there's any repairs needed, repair the storm sewer, give the city an easement so we could get in and maintain that storm sewer, because if we don't, Menards, ponds, and everything else will have no discharge. And we could back water up as far as the North Cape Industrial Park. So that's a concern we have. So we're not even sure where it discharges here, but I think it may be buried through this project, parcel 2. And so we should get an easement here. We should check the condition. And then I guess I recommend the city, if that fails, that we go in and fix it at their cost. I'm a little concerned with trucks on hydric soils that you place those, although you have some carrying capacity over, On organic soils, you don't have a lot of carry capacity, and the wheel loads may damage the pipe. So that's kind of our engineering concern.
Okay. Anyone else?
That is
Mr. Haley?
And I've talked to them about it, I've talked to planning about it, so everybody's been aware of this from the very beginning.
And I do agree with that. I didn't know about the soil, the weight is actually a pretty good point. We're both okay with giving the city an easement. We're going to ask the current owner, Patrick Leeson, to videotape it, kind of like a
closed-circuit television?
That's what you used to do. No. All right, so we can buy it. That's
conditional
want
sale.
To do. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So we're going to ask him to maybe do that for us. And if it's all good, we can buy it.
Mr. Haley?
I'd like to just understand how you're using the existing site a little bit better.
Yeah.
This building, you'd be using the existing building, the offices for office space, correct?
Yes, and actually there'd be a lot of unused office space. It's kind of an income property. I think there's four different sections, and the section we'd really be using is like right there, this in here, because it goes downstairs. Downstairs perfect because there's like all these odd little rooms, and it's dirty down there. A filthy guy can walk in downstairs, clean up the locker room, and it's perfect for them. Upstairs, there is a nice office for dispatchers and, my IT office.
Okay. That said, and then this area is actually down low. It's at the basement elevation,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And there's, I'm trying to remember, there's garage doors here?
Yeah, there's a real small garage door right here. It's barely taller than me. It might be 8x8, if that. And then there's a bigger one right here, which might be a 10x10.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand where this indoor servicing of vehicles would happen. Probably not inside the basement of the existing building. You don't have a lot of clearance or room.
Not the way it is right
that
now.
Ultimately, your vision would be to enclose this as garage base?
Yep, and it'd actually come right up to the easement. My idea would be go there, and you have two service bays.
And then this bank is just outdoor storage buildings, roof and walls? It's not a service area you think you'd build?
No, we couldn't build anything there because of the power line easement.
Right. I thought that's being shown as gravel truck parking. Okay.
Oh, parking.
So just be surface parking.
Just parking, yeah. Just
okay.
It's a good spot. It's close to the building. If you got to run on extension cords, that's like perfect spot to park on. And in the normal write-up, it said room for up to 6 trucks. It's one thing I want to bring up right now. We have 7 going on 8. And there's plenty of room there to park along that line, but I just want to make sure that wasn't like we're not signing off to if we have more than 6 trucks, we'd get in trouble.
Okay, and so the service would ultimately be happening in this area in a new building, a new enclosure.
When it was built, yeah.
And that's where you would need the extinguisher system. I mean, if you're not servicing vehicles in the existing, you shouldn't have to retrofit that. It's when you create the building that you'll be doing repairs in. This.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
So when you build that, that would be the time I would suspect when you have to bite the bullet and put in a fire suppression system.
Sure.
But it wouldn't necessarily have to be retrofitting the entire building.
And that was one question we were going to ask because the rest of the building is pretty ancient. If we were to add on, would you guys, do you think the fire department would ask us just to sprinkler that part?
Good question for them, unless that.
I think where you're parking trucks, the fire department's probably good.
Just in there.
For sure. Because that's a hazardous area.
Indoors.
Yeah.
But if the ones you're parking outside shouldn't be an issue. And then the future building, you'd need to make that comply with all codes.
Yeah, we even thought, because the building is, when you walk through it, it smells a little damp. No one's been in it. It hasn't been heated and cooled properly for a while. We even thought, maybe the best businessmen in the world and have enough money to maybe knock the whole thing down and build a state of the art building. I mean, who knows what'll happen, but really, the grand idea right now is just to add that addition.
City attorney?
I only
oh,
ahead.
I only looked at the issue once. It was spring of 1993, and the issue was whether or not you had to sprinkle an existing building. Fire department said yes when it was changing from residential to commercial, and the correct answer ultimately was on an exit. This is a long time ago. Existing building, if you're modifying or remodeling or expanding more than 25 or more percent of the existing building, then the entire building has to be sprinkled.
Okay. That's what it was. Being the clear, because that, I just did like rough measurements. I think it'd be like 3,500.
Sure. So the point is somewhere down the line, when you go to build, create that structure is when you'll have to deal with it. It's okay. Not an upfront cost to you until you start putting vehicles inside the existing building.
In the
existing garages that are underneath.
Yeah, and we're not going to be doing repairs. I mean, I might pull it in and like do a fuel filter, or we might, like right here, there is a spot to bring in two trucks, and like, you know, today is a perfect example. 2 weeks ago, I mean, we've been, you know, they park outside, we can like park one truck inside, and the trucks that don't start because it happened in the cold weather, we've been pushing them in with other trucks, warming them up, changing fuel filters, and getting them on the road again. And I mean, that would be like an essential part of business.
Well, then you'd have to work with fire inspection building to make sure that that's compatible.
Okay. And I mean, a fire alarm, I mean, we probably would put in a security system and a fire alarm, you know, combination. I mean, the fire alarm thing probably wouldn't be an issue. I guess, again, I'd have to check costs, but I don't think the fire alarm would be an issue. It's just that sprinkler thing would just do it, like, you know.
Understood.
I'd have to throw the books in there. It would be a big disappointment.
I wanted to make one common suggestion to think about as you move forward, assuming you do this. Ultimately, your proposal is to put a no-visibility fence through here.
Yep.
What about thinking about moving on the same alignment, working off of this building? That you can utilize this for parking, reconfigure the parking there. You get a bigger lot. The screening to the back area happens sooner. It makes neighbors happier. Less is visible. So, and you might even be able to do that sooner rather than putting in temporary fences. Just build a better fence here with your gate in it. Everything outside the fence is public parking. Inside the fence, you can do employee parking. You've got a much bigger usable space, and it's all hidden behind that fence with happy neighbors. From the street, you'd see building facade and a wall, and everything would be hidden. So it's just a thought. It's the same cost.
Yeah.
Just move that out, because as you were describing, you've got a bunch of wasted space in here. This parking could easily be located along a strip in here in front of that fence, giving you this. The employees can park behind the fence up in here. You have a much larger usable space is my only point.
It's a good idea, and you know, I'm not real good with these maps. I think I just use this easement as like a split between the top and the bottom. But you know, you are right. I think the top property kind of starts sloping actually where the building is.
Right. Then your fence is higher, better, more view blockage from the street, and everything is happening behind that down below. I think they could look better for the street and make some neighbors happier.
I think I'm going to return back. We are in the middle of a public hearing, and so I would ask you to...
Sorry.
No, not at all. I just want to conclude the public hearing and see if there are any other citizens wishing to speak during the public hearing, and then we can return back to the questions of the plan commissioners and the staff. So is there anyone else wishing to speak during the public hearing regarding item 3A, OMS Properties LLC, truck repair and towing business? Going once, going twice. Anyone else wishing to speak during the public hearing? Seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close the public hearing. And now, Mr. Bennett.
Yes, I'm not going to vote for this. I think we can do better on this site. I think this whole area has been a problem for the city over many periods of time, for a period of time. And I think we could get a better use in here that would be more compatible with the neighborhood. We have residential on the other side. My experience is that we will receive complaints vehicles and all. You got junk vehicles. Are they going to be really good in getting rid of these? Or are we going to start accumulating? I just think it's turned into a problem area. And this is a special use for trucks and for this. So it gives discretion to the plan commission. I think if you go through the seven or eight conditions that you're supposed to look at on special use, that it would be injurious to the neighborhood. So I will vote no.
Staff, we're already getting tax revenue on this site?
Yes, but not much because it's a vacant, or it's less because it's a vacant building.
You know how much less?
No.
Okay. Is it a lot less?
My understanding from the master storage was they were able to increase their building threefold, but that was by redeveloping the entire site.
That's not happening.
And they're not redeveloping the entire site.
All right. So us trying to get closer to the 70-30.
It would only be a small step.
Actually, it would pretty much stay the same, right? Is that correct?
Yes. Citywide, yes.
All right. I don't know that had any meetings or discussions with this other than with staff, and you're recommending approval.
With a number of conditions.
But are you recommending that we make this change, or is it that you don't see any obstacles in the ordinances? In other words, are you advocating that the plan commission and the common council move in this direction, or are you just saying that they're in compliance?
They're in compliance if those conditions could be met. It's essentially if screening could be achieved, because there is some, you know, car lot, you know, from the adjacent property owners. So we think, yes, it's not a very pretty use of the property. It hasn't been a pretty use of the property for a long time, but the adjacent properties are not in the best shape either. With proper screening, we thought it was okay.
But from an economic development standpoint, are you advocating strongly that this
strongly
is going?
Strongly, no.
Oh. Mr. City Attorney.
What just jumped out at me through the course of this evening, and I wasn't aware that this would be an issue, but I heard repeatedly that if a sprinkler system has to be installed, it's a deal breaker. And then I also heard that in the current structure, there would be indoor vehicle work of some kind, including, well, even if it's just parking. I don't like to guess, but I would guess that sprinkler system is mandatory, period, not discretionary. And if it's maybe that answer should be had, as opposed to staff opinions, such as, well, I think it is.
We did eventually get a straight answer. It was
okay,
not
so
clear.
We do have comments from the fire department. If the applicant is going to park any vehicles, doing anything with vehicles that's a change of use, they would have to sprinkle the building. Otherwise, they cannot park inside that existing building.
Yeah, we had an issue with a car wash, you might remember. It's Suds. And owner was very, very upset with the amount of sprinkling that had to go into that building for a car wash. And I took at least three tours of that facility, and my understanding was the only reason that was necessary was because of the heater systems that were below the office space. So I'm thinking if you're going to put in a full-blown sprinkler system for a car wash, that this definitely is going to fall under there. So I guess before I would be willing to support any of this, I would want to have a letter from the chief, from the fire chief, saying yes or no, that clear, before these gentlemen start to go off and go spend an enormous amount of money, only to find out that at the end of the road, they're going to get hit with an unbelievable bill for sprinkler systems. Now, I know that the fire chief has talked to me about bringing in a different ordinance, or a next ordinance, but right now, I think the ordinance that's on file is the same ordinance or fire code that was in place for Sud's car wash, which would mean to me that these gentlemen are going to have to do as much, if not more, in the way of sprinklers than the car wash guys, and extremely expensive.
Unlike usual, we did get the comments from the chief himself. And if I could quote it, I could read it. So it's an email from the chief saying that he talked to Jeff, the applicant, and confirmed that the sprinkler system would be needed if they intended to work on vehicles in the existing building, as he told me that they may be doing, since that would certainly constitute a change of use and an increased hazard. He then indicated that they may consider only occupying the office space and storing vehicles in the outdoor lot with the intent of building new garage space or an addition for auto repair. I understand the cost of retrofitting the existing space is prohibitive. If they are willing to only occupy the existing structures of office space with the condition that no vehicles be stored, parked, or worked in within the current structure, then there may be some leeway, provided any addition or new building will be up to current code.
Yeah. Well, the biggest complaint I get is about the fire suppression code for the city. I mean, I can remember meeting with the owner of Carmex. They're opening up the new addition. They were so upset that they were thinking literally of moving out of the city, Carmex Corporation. So, and it was the complaint I get is, why didn't they tell us right up front that we were going to have to do this instead of waiting for the bill to come in? The last thing that it sounds like these gentlemen have a very thriving business, probably so much so that you need to find more room. Last thing that I want to do as the mayor is to mislead you or to give you bad information, and then at a later date you get a bill in the mail and you're not pleased with it. So I think we're going to, from my perspective, before I would support this, I need to get it black and white, yes or no, and I'm here with the city attorney. I think at the end of the day, the whole area or that whole building is going to have to be handled with sprinklers. And I'm very, 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 very familiar with that building and the inside of it. So.
And on that point, one thing that absolutely should be clarified is, would the area that have to be sprinklered would be just the portion where the vehicles would be stored, parked, or repaired, or would the entire building, multiple levels, have to be? I think there needs to be that very clear. That could have a significant impact on the cost. So that's something that I think should also be made completely clear.
Yeah. We at one time had the strictest fire suppression code, I believe, in the state of Wisconsin. It was lowered a little bit, but not much.
I did talk to the Village of Hales Corners with some folks I knew there about this particular operation, and they spoke highly of their ability to work with the neighbors. So if we can work through this, I think they'd be a good addition to the city. I mean, it may not be the right location, but I would. The village did speak highly of their ability to work with the neighbors and be good citizens. And they are in a residential area, I believe, now. Is that correct? I mean, I've driven by it, and you guys have residents in there. So just wanted to add that to the record.
Question for Knipple and then Mr. City Attorney.
Question for Joel. Does the regulation for sprinklers just specify sprinklers, or can it be another type of fire suppression similar to, you know, carbon dioxide?
I would not know.
That gets more expensive.
Well,
it's more expensive to add a halon or carbon. Yeah, the sprinkler system is the cheap, I think. I'm not an expert.
That might be something that we ask the chief if that could be substituted, if that's.
I mean, all you have to do is bring up the word sprinkler to the gentleman that owns the car wash. And you will be there.
I've got some extra sprinklers in my garage.
But I have to say, I went overnight. I think I called the city attorney or the fire chief from the upper floors of the car wash twice, Mr. City Attorney.
Only that, as the mayor said, you just need an answer here. It's not a matter of whether you want to work with an applicant. It's what's the answer. And yeah. Mr. Dietl read the chief's comments. The last one was, well, even if they're not working on vehicles inside, the need for sprinklers may be. You know, we don't want any maybes. We'll get to the bottom.
Should we table this?
I would think that would be the appropriate action. A number of good comments have been made here with regard to screening, with regard to fire suppression, that sort of thing. So I think the applicant is willing to continue on this. I think there's some things that need to be clarified before we should reach a conclusion on it.
I would, before we act on this, I would take a moment, though, to express my appreciation to staff for the work they've done here. We routinely get very good work from staff so often that I think we just take it for granted. In this case, it seems like, okay, it's an existing property. They're not proposing major changes. Somebody else wants to buy it and move in. What's the big deal, you know? But I think if you look at the extent of the write-up and the number of conditions, obviously there's a whole lot that needs to be addressed here, and yet staff has looked into it. They've identified those things. They've gotten the information for us, presented it to us, identified a number of conditions. That's not unusual. That's just kind of the norm. So, but it sort of sticks out a little bit more here because this would seem like a relatively simple.
It was Nick again.
But I would. I just want to take a moment here before we get off this to note that I really did appreciate because, like I say, on the surface it would seem like a relatively simple thing, but obviously there was a lot to be covered, and staff found those things and provided us the information. And I want to make a point of that.
When you have at least one long-term commissioner who's basically saying whether it's sprinkler or not, that he's not supportive of the proposal to begin with.
Can I?
And your name is Alderman Schmidt.
Yes. I would just like to ask the applicant if you were in agreement with all the other conditions that our planners had imposed on, if they had a chance to review what the recommendations were.
I made a couple notes. I just want to make sure I covered everything. There was one other thing I'd like to talk about. Staff recommends paving the employee parking to the north. On that last one, I made a little square. I thought maybe we park our employee cars up there. I wouldn't be against moving.
It must be night over there right now.
But I think paving there would might be a bad idea just because when we want to put that big fence across, you know, I'd like to keep gravel. You know, pavement, when you bring in a crash car, looks horrible after that. You know, you really got to be able to keep it nice with gravel. And I think that's the only thing I didn't cover.
Okay. Is there a... there be a motion to table this until such time as the staff is comfortable to bring it back with some definitive answers?
So moved.
Fire department.
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Six ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you very much for bringing your business to Franklin, your interest. If you could stay in contact with Mr. Deedle. Plan Commission is recommending that we get additional definitive answers on this. On definitely the sprinkler system.
Can I make a couple comments?
They're brief.
Yeah, they are. I know you guys probably want to get out, but I mean, we try to stay involved. I mean, Hales Corner is a small community, but we try to stay involved in the community so we look good. You know, especially, you know, we sponsor some of the Hales Corners youth softball teams, and the kids' tow trucks are fun. You know, we're in the parade in Hales Corners. I mean, it's small, but, you know, you can fly a big American flag off of a tow truck. You know, you can bring it to a baseball game or something. And just because a lot of revenue is generated through cities and towing business, you know, us being in Franklin, we'd actually probably want to try to be a big part of Franklin community activities just so we have that better look, you know, advertisement and just, you know, when you're in a community, you want to be a part of it. You know, with a business like that, I think it fits in good.
Okay, thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is the Cory Monitoring Committee status report for the committee's review of local regulations, operations, monitoring activities. Before we begin, the staff has been keeping me abreast of the activities and motions, et cetera, probably since the inception of the Cory Monitoring Committee. My understanding is that the committee has made quite a few recommendations, but they're also, they've been going through the existing PDDs. Is there two PDDs?
There are two, but they focused all their efforts to this point on the Payne-Dolan PDD, so PDD number 23.
Yeah. So anyhow, because the staff has been keeping me up to date on all of this, it sounds to me like the quarry monitoring committee would like to make recommendations to changes to the PDDs, to the ordinances.
Correct.
Maybe to save time and to get an answer back as quickly as possible, I guess I would recommend that to this committee, to be recommended to the Common Council, the Common Council look into whether outside legal staff should be hired, selection of that, to see whether or not it is possible to revisit plan development district documents. I think we've entered into agreements like that in the past for sexual predator ordinance and impact fees, et cetera, et cetera. It's not that I don't think that we have the best municipal attorney in the country. I do. But we have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of things for Mr. Wesolowski. And I think having had some history in this matter, the more unbiased people, staff, elected officials, anyone attached to the city, it'd be better, just like we did with Aquifer and going out for a consultant, is to take it to the council and have them weigh in on whether they would like to have a private council look into it. Maybe the Quarry Monitoring Committee would like to be the selection committee. I don't know, just to throw it out, you know, strike from five, something like that, strike from seven. I mean, like you did with, and I'm looking at Fred because he worked on the aquifer process.
Been on both committees.
Right, and, if it's Quarles and Brady, or if it's Michael Best and Friedrich, or if it's whatever, and have at it, because I think it, in the long run, what everyone is looking for is to see if, in fact, that those documents can be revisited. I personally was not around at the time that the ordinances were created. I certainly have heard a little bit about some of that.
The quarry wars.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. I think some of the local residents would look kindly on outside. They don't trust the city, I think, in this matter. So
well, I remember the thing that got us to selecting a monitoring firm was that there was a big concern that the fire department was not trusted or may have been skewing the statistics, et cetera, et cetera. Or that the monitoring equipment were not located properly, and so those things were skewed. But you know, we've city attorney has plenty to do, and I just gave him more today. But I just think it would be a healthy way of doing the process. We've done it with Aquifer. It would kind of get it off the dime too, because you've been meeting for about 2 years since I created it.
Year and a half.
Year and a half.
Year and a half.
So, okay.
Line by line by line by line.
Yes. I was just going to do a little bit of an introduction history-wise and then leave the two representatives to talk about the current situation. As part of that would be the status report. So historically, the committee was created a year and a half ago or recreated. There used to be a quarry monitoring committee a number of years ago. So June of 2012, Common Council passed an ordinance forming the Quarry Monitoring Committee, with its task is to be able to review and provide comment and recommendations to the Common Council about anything quarry monitoring related. And they were also involved in the final review and selection of a consultant that the city ultimately hired to do this monitoring. So since July of 2013, we have had a full-time, prior to that I should mention, we had a Aquifer Science and Technology providing some limited monitoring. And then in July of last year, Stantec is doing a full-fledged monitoring of the quarry. So the committee is being kept apprised of those efforts. And in addition to that, a number of things have come up over the year and a half. For instance, there was a particularly large blast September of last year by Payne and Dolan, just under the PDD limits ultimately determined. But very loud, very unusual, hadn't been one that loud as far as I could tell since the 1990s. So we received a number of complaints. The mayor took the fire chief and I out there immediately to determine what was going on, and we didn't leave until we found out. The quarry monitoring committee invited all these consultants that the Payne and Dolan has, invited Payne and Dolan to come in and explain the entire situation. So a memo was prepared to inform the council of all this.
I think we had a police officer, that took a police record of this.
Yes. They did provide one status report to the quarry monitoring committee, provided a status report to the council back in March of last year. July of last year, Payne and Dolan acquired Vulcan. There's one owner now. Payne and Dolan owns the entire quarry. Still two PDDs, and the PDDs were drafted anticipating that possibility that all the requirements that Vulcan was responsible for now must be assumed by Payne and Dolan. Payne and Dolan wrote a letter acknowledging that fact. 13 meetings over this year and a half, investigating, in addition to that large blast. They've reviewed the information the city has available on the complaint process and just generic background information about the quarry and the planned development districts. They've updated that information to make sure it was correct as of last year, and put that information on the city website, in a city newsletter, letter, and cable access TV. They are looking specifically at dust control measures, and there may be some recommendations coming from the committee in that regard as well. Use of cameras, use of tarps on the trucks that leave the quarry, those kinds of things. And then in addition, they've been going line by line through PDD 23, the PDD for Payne and Dolan, the original Payne and Dolan half. And possibly as early as next month, they would be finalizing those comments and recommendations for changes to the PDD. And it appears that they would like to present those to the Plan Commission for your consideration and support as well, and eventually take those to the Common Council. So that's where we're at. Oh, and one last point is then, through this review, they also identified, as I had preliminarily determined as well, one of the requirements of the PDD for both quarries was the preparation of a reclamation plan. It's also required by state code, administrative code. We have an ordinance that we had to adopt back in the early 2000s, required by the state for communities with quarries to require a reclamation plan. It appears that reclamation plan wasn't adopted by the Common Council. At the time, it was prepared jointly by the two quarries, submitted to the Plan Commission for review. Plan Commission ultimately recommended denial.
Which Plan Commission? This one or?
No, back in the early 2000s. Okay. So 2002 or 2003. Went to the Common Council anyway. Common Council sent it back to the Plan Commission staff for further work. I find no evidence that any action was taken after that point. So the Quarry Monitoring Committee is currently looking into that matter as well. There will probably be recommendations in regards to that.
So the Plan Commission made recommendations on a reclamation plan to the Common Council, but back in approximately 2003, I wasn't on, I think I had left the council at that time. The council at that time decided not to move forward on a reclamation plan.
And moved to send it back to Plan Commission staff.
So you sure it's 2003?
That was a date stamped on the reclamation diagram.
I believe it is. I can run downstairs and double check, but I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay. Well, I think it's very important because based on what you've told me regarding the DNR audit, a reclamation plan is required to be passed by a common council. So I wasn't here at the time. I don't know that anybody here wasn't there at the time. I don't know why the council wouldn't take the recommendations of the plan commission and put forward a reclamation plan.
I can probably answer that.
Okay.
I think at that time the council felt that the reclamation plan should not be completed until to a point where the quarry was getting ready to shut down, because none of the aldermen and the people here now are going to be around when the quarry finally decides to do something. And that's how I recall the plan commission saying, it doesn't make sense for us to approve a plan now that's not going to be put into effect for 15, 20 years. That's my best recollection.
Yeah, but isn't it required?
I don't know if it was required back then.
That might be the change. Yeah, no, I think like there was a desire to defer that to the people of the future who would live with the implementation of that plan. And yeah, it may be that subsequent to that, now there's a state requirement to have to do it. And if that's the case, then we certainly should revisit it at this point and meet, you know, fulfill our requirements under the state. But yeah, I think it was an intent at the time to leave that to the people who would deal with the consequences of the reclamation plan to actually be the approvers of it.
There was some discussion about this at the Environmental Commission many years ago when I was a member of the Environmental Commission. We talked about what had happened to that plan. And my understanding was at the point, that time it was told that it was tabled by the council. But now this information comes out. So obviously there was some confusion about what happened to the plan. I have a question. Is there a file? Is there a reclamation plan that we could see to review? It probably should go on our agenda at some point for us to review this. And if it was put back on our lap, we should take action to send it back to the council. And then a second question, I remember the complaints that we received from residents of the quarry. One of them was not just the noise, but the vibrations. They had talked about the cracks in their basements and et cetera. Has there been any progress? Or maybe there was nothing, maybe that was just a fiction, according to the residents. But they claimed there was a vibration issue and that they were requesting monitoring of those vibrations. And being way outside of my expertise, did this monitoring committee have a chance to look at any of those complaints?
The monitoring, the consultant that we hired, the city hired, one of the things they monitor are the ground vibrations. Okay. And they have not recorded, neither Aquifer Science and Technology, the interim consultant that we were utilizing, nor Stantec, the one that we're utilizing now, have ever found, step back and say Aquifer Science and Technology was only monitoring ground vibrations on a regular basis. They didn't monitor anything else, though. The consultant that we have now will monitor ground vibrations periodically, and they're doing other things as well, monitoring, actually going into the quarry, taking written reports, photographs, many things. No record that they've ever violated during those monitoring times. The quarries have always monitored themselves, and according to their records, and I've checked their records say they've never violated the PDD, because there is a lower limit and an upper limit. The lower limit by the PDD can be exceeded 15% of the time in a calendar year, but the upper limit can never be exceeded. And according to the quarry's own monitoring, they've never exceeded those limits. And then when we've had consultants monitor, it was never exceeded either.
And the monitoring, and the monitoring takes place during the actual activity when they're blasting.
It's a seismograph that's either in place 24/7, or is put in place for a number of days. Then they remove it, take the batteries out, fix it, move it to another location. So there are periods.
So it's continuous. I mean, that was the concern the neighbors had. I remember they expressed it that the monitoring was only being done when there was no blasting. I think they were trying to show to them that no, that's not correct. That it was 24/7 monitoring.
Yes. And I periodically go out there and inspect things as myself, make sure the monitors.
So it sounds like those issues that the neighbors wanted to be addressed and monitored have been monitored, and we have data to take back. And I guess I would request that we ask for this file or the recommendation to be placed in our packet for one of our meetings, whether the next one or a follow-up one, that we have time to review it and then discuss it at the planning committee and put it on our agenda.
The timing may work well. It could be as quickly, my guess would be not the next planning commission meeting, but the second meeting in February is my guess is when something will be coming from the Port of Lander.
If I could request, do we have the, as part of that file, would it be the past recommendation that the planning commission made? And we could take a look at that.
I can include those motions.
Okay. I would appreciate that.
Just one question. On the, you said the vibrations and the original monitoring consultant was not monitoring. Was that part of their duties under the contract?
No. Aquifer was monitoring ground vibrations, okay, but only ground vibrations.
No noise or dust.
Correct. No noise or dust.
That was an issue as well.
I guess one question, with all your research, and I know you've done a lot, how many violations have there been of either our ordinances or the state law, either with monitoring vibrations, blasting?
Bless you. Excuse me. There appear to have been a few, if you go back far enough. The late 1990s and the early 2000s, so both before and after the PDDs were adopted, it appears there may have been violations.
I'm sorry, Nick. What years?
The late 1990s and the early 2000s, so shortly before the PDD was approved and shortly after the PDD was approved. There may have been violations.
But the PDD is the document that controls the monitoring.
Yes.
Okay.
And complaints were filed. The DNR investigated for air quality, for instance. There were complaints about dust, and the DNR investigated it. And it appears from the records that I was able to look at that the DNR did say that there may have been something. For instance, in one instance, I remember the watering for one of the crushers broke. So they were supposed to water the rock as it's being crushed. The water broke. The water system broke. They weren't watering the crusher. The dust cloud escaped the hole. Somebody complained, the DNR investigated, and said, and essentially, as far as I can tell, said, fix that immediately, and that was all.
Okay, how many times have the ordinances of our city been violated?
That was one of ours. That was our standard. No dust can leave that hole, and that was ours.
Is that, in all these years, that's the only one you can recall?
I believe there was probably two or three. I don't know exact number.
I mean, my understanding is with the blast that there's a higher threshold in our ordinances for the monitoring of the blast than the state law.
Yes, we're more strict.
But there's also a provision in there, and I'm only going by recollection, that it has to be like three or four blasts. I mean, the blast that I took you, or I ordered you and the fire chief to come with me, that clearly, I think, was over the limits.
Over the lower limit. So our limit, our city limit, is a lower limit and a higher limit.
Right. But under our ordinance, doesn't it have to be two or three of those in a year?
15% of total blasts.
Okay. So with that blast in and of itself, was they in violation of the ordinance?
No.
Okay. I mean, it's very clear, just like the sprinkler ordinance, not maize, not maybes.
Yep.
You know, yes, no.
Yep. That blast, no, was not a violation. Close, but it was not.
I mean, this has been a, way before I got involved in Franklin politics, this has been around. Now, I've also learned some things, and I don't know that you included this in your report, but I think it's important to include. And I got this having lunch with Dougie, where he introduced me to two young ladies who, about our age, right, their parents owned the property.
Oh, yes.
And I had no idea that what we call the quarry was actually farm fields. But little by little, the farms were sold. Maybe you know this. I didn't know this until just recently. That each farm was sold with the total understanding by all of the elected officials at that time that property was going to be turned into a quarry. Because what I've always heard is, how in the world did a quarry get built in the middle of your city and you gave up the downtown And I just assumed, like probably like most people, that that quarry was around since the 1800s. And what I discovered from those two young ladies was that one parcel was sold off, the next parcel was sold off, the next parcel was sold off.
Well, initially, the Folocks had had the farm on 68th Street. When it was discovered there was limestone there, they started like leasing the property, and they were getting a percentage of each load that was taken out of there. And that's where
but
it started
but the, off. But the city fathers at that time had to have been given, gave permission to allow a quarry to be built right in downtown Franklin.
That would have been 1941.
Well, so. But I was going to say, was that city of Franklin or town of Franklin? That would have been before we had the city government structure that we have at this point.
I mean, to me, that was shocking.
And it was county zoning in those days. It wasn't city zoning.
Yeah, so the county had the zoning rights to determine.
Oh, the county had.
So it's your fault. We're going to blame it on the county.
There you go. Blame it on the county.
I do know that 1988 does reflect, because that was the one time we had three of our pictures knocked off our walls. And we still think it was the blasting from the quarry that did it. So they denied it, and our neighbors had the same problem.
1990, the quarry.
So it was 98 that we had pictures knocked off.
Yeah. That's when they started talking about expanding the quarry.
But if they wouldn't have rezoned the property from agricultural, then there would be no quarry there, right?
They would have, there was an old M3 zoning district that allowed quarry. They would have had a stop at that limit. And that limit is smaller than the PDD limits that we have today.
Or the county. The county really had the zoning.
I mean, you were probably somewhat around at that time.
69.
I suppose it was, what was the population? Maybe
12,000.
12,000, and it was mostly farm property.
Almost all residential. No apartments, no condos, all single family residential. About 12,000 people. 4.22.
Probably similar to the quarry that we've used now for the rock stone that we're using for our river project. It's out in the middle of farm fields, but if it ever gets developed, it's in Berlin. So it sits in the middle of a bunch of farm fields, but development is creeping toward that quarry.
But the people at the time didn't, or did they have, did they say that they were totally against having the turn of a
quarry? There was complaints ever since I can remember from with the city. There was complaints in the quarry. They did not like the blasting.
When we get Lake Franklin, everybody's going to be happy.
Oh, I'd love to have Lake Franklin. You know, I live right very close to that. And
have you ever experienced pictures knocked off?
Absolutely. I've actually filed complaints.
So we had that up at dust west, because we live a little bit farther west than you do.
Well, and I have the white dust in the house.
Sometimes it depends on where they blast and how it affects different people.
Yeah. Pretty soon I'm going to call my alderman. I think that's a real revelation to people like me that moved here from other parts that didn't have the history. I came in, I looked at it, I went, well, it's probably been here since the 1800s. But
it's the economic development of the time. We needed stone, it was industry, right? Okay. A lot of
but they
jobs.
Have had other issues
back
at their
in the day.
You know, sometimes you were just like Solomon. No, I mean, you're right.
There have been other issues at the quarry as well with water quality, too, because they used to drop their rock flour into the Root River. I have reported them numerous times to the DNR. They have stopped that since. Yeah. But
well,
they used to dump them. And I think, Jack, you've reported it as well.
Jack wouldn't have to go on Lake Michigan and sail his sailboat. He'd be right in the middle of Franklin.
Right in the middle of Franklin.
That would be beautiful. Probably would be the most valuable property in Franklin. Mr. Alder?
Well, it's interesting because there has always been the contention as a there's no proof that that quarry was opened in the 1940s, but I actually, a few months ago when I was informed that they actually had pictures hanging in their office there, in the old Vulcan office, and I actually went over and took pictures because it showed pictures of the trucks that were hauling the stone out. Of course, I suppose they could have said, well, they could have still been using trucks from 1941, you know, 10 years later or something, but it was an indication of when they were first servicing limestone from that quarry. And I would just like to say, since we have Mr. Knipple and I being involved with the quarry monitoring, put a lot of effort in the last few months in reviewing. I think it was a very good exercise reviewing the PDD 23 due to the fact that people have long forgotten all the things that were part and parcel to that, and there may be some good updates that we need to remind the Corey of in being good citizens. Nothing dramatic, but things that had been kind of neglected over the years. And so I think I have to give credit to Mr. Deedle, too, for his diligence in taking notes and then bringing back the notes and then having the notes changed again and maintaining the updates on all the recommendations we've made on changing the PDD. So I think it'll be good to review for everyone. And the reclamation plans were interesting, too, to see what they were looking at. I believe that reclamation was a letter that was probably authorized by Clint Winnegar to have someone, a geologist, make those projections, and the projections were that once they stopped mining, there would take approximately 10 years to fill that quarry up.
I know that, having been the alderman of that district myself, that I looked at both the PDDs and read them line by line. There's portions of it that I can remember very vividly. But I took the quarry to task about putting the road down to the bottom of the quarry. Fred might remember that, moving their asphalt plant down to the bottom because that was a requirement.
The crushing plant.
Yeah, or the crushing. And then the asphalt, but they weren't necessarily real happy about that, but I said, well, that's what you agreed to.
And I so they did that. I solved a lot of our dust problems.
Yep. Yeah. What kind of things are they that you discovered? Were they ordinance violations, or were they gentlemen's agreements?
Some minor agreements that they had.
Citizens have been asking for some way to have the loads tarped on the trucks, and we've had information from Department of Transportation, the State Patrol, Sheriff's Department, our police department. There is no requirement for those loads to be tarped. The recommendation that we're going to do is if there's some way we can ask for some type of help from the quarries to encourage their independent contractors to tarp their loads. But we've had many complaints of by a citizen of dust on Rawson mm-hmm. Avenue.
Right.
And I've made it a point. I go into Milwaukee twice a week. So instead of going down 51st Street, I go down 68th and I go down Rawson. And I cannot honestly say that the amount of complaints that we heard from citizens about dust on Rawson Avenue, I don't know where they're seeing dust because I don't see it twice a week on a regular basis.
I mean, just for the record, I did go in and I did ask the quarries, both of them, to try and control and to encourage the drivers to tarp their trucks, and then we've had the police department out there several times monitoring the trucks coming out. And then I think there was one or two sweepers that were added.
Oh, yeah.
And Mark Borkowski, actually, county supervisor, was very, very helpful in getting the sweepers out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's I think the police chief will say, I don't know that there's a requirement that they must tarp, which is a problem. I guess the other thing is, you know, that is a, we get this stuff from Milwaukee County, sorry, Kevin, about doing this and doing that and all that. I mean, that is a county road. The sheriff is also always saying he's got people all over the place. Well, you know, if you want to station somebody, station them right there.
My personal experience driving down Rawson Avenue, I don't see a problem with the quarries.
Yeah, they've had wheel washes for years. I mean, I think that was a crime.
That was the thing I was going to address. You know, Vulcan has the wheel washers in there on the eastern thing.
Right.
The way that Payne and Dolan offset that is because they were the ones that paved their driveway, so they did not create as much dust with the vehicles coming up and down there, whereas Vulcan needed the wheel washers.
I guess the last thing I'd say on the subject is I've sat on both sides of the bargaining table, both from a union perspective and from a management perspective. And when you enter, when you're beginning to prepare for bargaining, first thing you do is you put together your wish list and you go through the contracts. And I'm looking at a certain person in particular here. And you correct clerical mistakes and you make recommendations. And it's referred to as a wish list on both sides. But at the initial set of bargaining, you sit down and you hope that you are able to get what you want. But it is a bargain. And I guess that's what I'm recommending, that this body recommend to the Common Council that private special attorneys be looked at. Maybe the Quarry Monitoring Committee would like to be the selection body, and that you look at whether or not these planned development districts can be reopened and can be negotiated. Is it something we can do unilaterally, or is it something that requires mutual agreement? I don't really know the answer to that. So, City Attorney.
In both PDDs, there are provisions for amendment after review by the Plan Commission and the Common Council. I've noticed.
One final.
It's still so quiet.
We're not recommending wholesale changes. There are just things that we have found that are in the PDD that haven't been done for whatever reason. And our recommendations, most of them have been to say, okay, they're in the PDD, we'll continue with that, but we want things done that haven't been done in the past. So we're not, when I read the PDD and did research on it, it was very well written by a very experienced team of lawyers. And there is not much in there that can be reopened as far as my reading goes. We can ask for things, but I think it would be a long uphill battle to do anything like that.
Well, I very much appreciate that, Fred, and I know you know probably more about that quarry than most people in the city.
No, Margie knows more.
just lost my train of thought on it. I think there's a desire. I know there's a desire. It has been for many, many years by a large group to see what types of things can or cannot be done. And the best way I know to try and achieve that would be for the council to, I have the best municipal attorney in the world right next to me, but get a private firm, have the Quarry Monitoring Committee select that, and then make a recommendation to the Common Council and see if you can go in and revisit the document or maybe terminate the document. I don't know. But I think until we do that, this entire issue is going to fester and remain in this city. On a personal level, I live close to it. I wish it was a lake, and I wish there were high-end condominiums around it.
There will be.
So he's just digging a hole for itself, that's all I can say.
All right.
Bad pun.
Do we need a motion to, or would the Plan Commission want to take another date to think about this? Or?
I thought you directed staff to provide us the background materials.
Just for the recommendation for the
private attorney.
The reclamation.
Yeah, I directed the staff to bring the reclamation and put it reclamation plan.
This would be different, would it not?
But what I'm talking about is a potential motion to recommend to the Common Council that they ask the Quarry Monitoring Committee to look at the selection of a private law firm to, in essence, look at both PDDs to see if they can be reopened and revisited and amended.
So moved.
Is there Second? Second. Okay. Any further discussion?
Well, Mr. Riddle? My understanding, and perhaps I misunderstood, is that perhaps there are other things in the PDDs that are not being enforced or not being monitored.
Right, not being done.
Okay. Well, and that I would think, in addition to the reclamation, that I would think we should, if there's anything in there in terms of what the current ordinances are that aren't being monitored or aren't being enforced, then yes, I think those should be brought back to the Planning Commission. We should be aware of that and see what action should be taken.
Yes.
That's separate from this motion here, and frankly, I don't think I would support that if the Monitoring Committee wants to. This is a fiscal matter. It's up to the Common Council. It's going to involve expending, you know, city money. If the Board of Monitoring Committee wants to take the issue to the council, it's their decision to make. But I don't think we've got, on the basis of some discussion here, we haven't seen a report of anything like that. I think it would be premature to make a recommendation to the Common Council. I would like to have more to support that. And I'm frankly, I'd like to see a case made for it. I mean, some people have always hated that quarry. No matter how much money the Common Council spends, no matter what action is taken, short of shutting the quarry down, some people will go right on hating the quarry. And that's simply a fact of life. It's always been that way. It's entirely the manner of the Common Council to make that decision. I don't know that I have sufficient information to make a recommendation one way or the other. But certainly if there are things that are not being enforced, then that certainly, and the reclamation plan, those absolutely should be brought back to the Planning Committee. I can fully agree with that.
Mr. Fowler and Mr. Schmidt?
The only reason I support it, Randy, is there might be items in the PDDs that the Quarry Committee doesn't have the expertise to understand whether they are things that should be pursued or not pursued. So, and knowing how exactly how you feel and how the residents feel about it and how the cities, they feel, some of them feel, how the cities handle it, I think asking an outside, or asking the council to provide an outside legal firm to assist the Quarry Committee at their recommendation, I could modify my memo to state that the Planning Commission thinks this is a good idea, but we would wait for the recommendation of the quarry to do that. I just think it would be a good idea to have them have that outside legal assistance to be sure that we're pursuing the right things and not wasting volunteers' times of this quarry committee, that we're pursuing the right issues and the right things that need to be done to the PDD, some of these things that should be enforced or things that should be changed, that we get a legal opinion that helps us make that decision. Before the recommendations come forward, they may be a waste of time to do recommendations that we can't do anything about because the PDD is unbreakable and there's certain rules we can't. And I don't have the legal expertise to do that. And I just would like to have some outside legal look at it so that the residents feel that the city has kind of an arm's length.
Alderman Schmidt.
Well, I don't feel as far as the recommendations, whether or not the quarry committee has wasted its time, because we've already invested the time, so we're at the verge of moving forward. I would just prefer that at least that we bring it to the Plan Commission so that other people are able to view it, and if they have questions as whether there's a need for legal outside consultation, that we will have the Plan Commission support with us before we would move to that step of going out for legal consultation.
I didn't mean to say you guys wasted your time. I didn't want to see more time if there are things you can't look at.
Well, we're in the process of wrapping it up so we can present it to you.
Do you have the motion?
There was a motion to recommend to the Common Council to have the Quarry Monitoring Committee hire private counsel to see if the PDDs can be reopened.
Okay. Any further discussion? Mr. Knipple?
I would vote against that because I think it's premature, and I would wait until you have a chance to review the committee's report, because we're only a recommending body to you, and it's going to be up to you as a plan commission and me to send it on further if we think that's necessary. Because I don't, irregardless of what shows up in that report, my feeling is that it's not anything that will need to be fought over. I think it can be handled, in the city.
Okay. Go ahead.
And going back to the comment you made earlier, Mr. Mayor, if this, and I haven't seen this report either, but if it is as you had, if it would fall into the category that you had identified early as a wish list, then I don't know that I would be terribly enthusiastic about encouraging the Common Council to spend the city's money on pursuing somebody's wish list. But having not seen the report, you know, I just don't feel in a position to.
Well, I was around, and I actually made the recommendation as an alderman to go out to get have the quarry monitoring committee hire a firm to monitor the quarries, because it was felt that even the fire department, members of the fire department, may have been skewing the records. And so there has always been, and I don't think it's changed at all, that you cannot have parties within City Hall doing this type of job. You have to go to outside firms. And I would say, just like with Aquifer Chemical, I think the only parties that would be acceptable to be recommended to the Common Council need to come from the Quarry Monitoring Committee itself. I think if it comes from any other body, it is once again going to be suspect and seen as tampered with, or there's a bias. So that's why I'm coming towards the end of my term here. But otherwise, I think we just continue going down the same road and the same road and the same road. And if in fact these are not the recommendations, are not ordinance violations, but things that the quarry call the gentleman's agreements or cooperative efforts, all you have to do is put that in writing and send a letter off to the Payne and Dolan.
One example that you will read about is that the quarry is required to give an aerial photograph once a year to the city. I can get a better picture off the Weather Channel off of Google than what you can get as an aerial photograph. The spy satellites go over, you know, practically every day. And that's just one of the things that's in the ordinance that we just said, you know, that's really not necessary to enforce something like that. We found anomalies like that throughout the whole document. And it's not anything that requires legal counsel to figure out.
Well, and I think we've had some discussion in the past about whether you're the zoning administrator or you're the planning administrator, correct?
No, I thought that was clarified with the UDO text amendment at one point.
Well, no, but it's who administers and who's the responsible for the enforcement and the monitoring of the two PDDs. It may, in fact, and I'm just going by recollection, it may, in fact, be this body right here.
Enforcement is the zoning administrator. But recommendations for changes originate with the Plan Commission, although now with this Quarry Monitoring Committee's authority, they can recommend changes, anything related to monitoring, they can recommend changes to the Council as well.
Okay.
So changes to the PDD, everything in the PDD is allowed and is provided for to come from the Plan Commission.
So are you the zoning administrator?
I believe so, yes.
So you're charged with enforcement of the PDDs. Okay, we have a motion. Mr. City Attorney.
Just with regard to the motion, and I appreciate the history involved, but with regard to the motion referencing whether or not the PDDs may be amended, the earlier reference, legal teams were on the other side of the table, and statutory-wise, PDDs are created with the consent of the property owner, which means amendments have to occur that way also. But on the other side of the table, from the legal teams, it was negotiated that they shall be amended. There are standards for amendment, but it doesn't require PDD operator owner consent. So they can be amended. And if the motion just says whether or not they can, somebody would say, well, why is the city spending money? Well, the answer is right on page 16. So perhaps the motions should say retain a special counsel to assist in reviewing potential amendments to the PDDs. just a thought.
Well, I would ask the maker of the motion rescind his motion and second it to take up the recommended motion from the city attorney.
So I approve.
And second?
Yep.
Rescind. And then I would ask the maker of the motion if he would make the motion that the city attorney has just recommended.
I so move.
And is there a second to that? Would you like to run back? Second to the motion. We just have this happen to the council.
But did it get us anywhere?
Motion fails for a lack of a second. Okay. Could you read the motion back, Mr. Fuchs?
It was a motion to recommend to the county council to have a quarry monitoring committee retain private counsel. I believe the city attorney was to assist in the review of possible amendments.
Okay.
A little more to its potential amendments.
So the motion fails for lack of a second. The other motion was rescinded.
But where do we stand? We are going to get the reclamation plan?
Yep.
Yes. Are we going to get any other issues
yes.
that may not be... Okay, so, and that is at the... whenever the staff has the material available to bring it to us. Okay.
And I will try to bring them both together at the same time unless the Quarry Monitoring Commission committee's recommendations are unduly delayed, like beyond the second meeting in February. I will bring the reclamation plan to you by itself.
For clarification and for the future minutes, I'd like it put into the record that the mayor, chairman of the Planning Commission, made recommendations regarding this issue. Okay? All right. Well, I spend more time. City of Franklin Complete Streets and Connectivity Committee status report on ongoing recent and current committee actions, consideration, and topics. I have one. We have an issue about North Cape Road. There was a listening session about the repair of it. Has the committee by itself either taken up the Trans 75 issue, or have they asked for an interpretation of Trans 75 and whether sidewalks are required when there's reconstruction of a road or the building of a road? Because it seems to me that this is a perfect fit for the connectivity committee, sidewalks.
We have been provided with the actual language okay. of Trans 75, had discussions about it. There are few, if any, exceptions to the rule, and they're very clearly stated in the supporting material.
And we discussed this with Clark Wontag, who's now the county's
deputy,
and they are moving ahead with the plans to put the sidewalk in because they have the right of way. They were talking about a sidewalk on the east side. They were talking about it. They took comment.
They're evaluating different alternatives right now, which is what's required. But Trans 75 says if there's state and federal money in it, you
have to put
unless there's very few exceptions for it, and you need to make a compelling case for that.
What if there's only county money?
Then it's whatever the county policy is.
Okay. I just talked to the state representative today, and he's had some discussions with some of the staff at the Department of Transportation, and I guess there's a question as to whether or not there's state and federal money involved here, or if it's just purely county.
And if I might, the bigger question is what do we want to do about it? I mean, there's cost issues, there's safety issues. Where does the city want to go?
Well, we had a lot of citizens that showed up at the Common Council meeting the other night, very, very upset that with the proposal of putting a sidewalk in and taking their trees, which I don't blame them at all because, you know, it's beautiful. I tried to explain, I think a couple other people tried to explain, well, it's the reason we're seeking an intergovernmental cooperation agreement on the road is we have been, for years, meaning the city, aldermen, everybody, trying to get Milwaukee County to repair that road before someone gets killed. And I think there might even be a report or a recommendation from law enforcement officers that that's what needs to take place. Make a long story short, I would only be interested in looking at that kind of an agreement if the road is going to be completely reconstructed, and that we're going to get a road that is going to be in place between 20 and 30 years. And then it might make some sense for us to do the maintenance on the road as a quid pro quo. But if you're going to put just a layer of asphalt on it, then it should be Milwaukee County's road, period. That's my opinion, and I guess, you know, if something came up to me that would be less than a full reconstruction of the road, I probably would veto it. But, you know, we get into the sidewalk issue, and I just think this is a perfect fit for the connectivity.
It is, and I went to the listening sessions and listened to it all, and I unfortunately wasn't here for the council, but there are myriad issues. There's at least five good solid ones, and it's cost, but, you know, the hardcore reality is you've got an extremely unsafe condition serving our elementary school. It's been that way. My kids went there. I can't believe we tolerated it. Haven't done something sooner. It's a mess, and it's unsafe. And, yes, there's trees, and, yes, there's impacts, and, yes, it comes at a cost, but there is no safe way to walk to that elementary school. And if you've ever been there when there are major events, people park on the street, both sides. There's people walking down the gravel shoulders. Something needs to be done. So all I can say is I heard a lot of differing opinions, and people were mostly concerned about the impact to their front yard, which are minimal. But I think the city, as you're suggesting, in negotiating with the county, should decide what do they want there. If we feel it's important to have safety, I mean, Trans 75 would have you building bike trails and walks on both sides. That's the law. That's what complete streets is. If we want to get away from that, there are ways, and one is to just resurface and remill and not make it a complete rebuild. But if you're going to do a rebuild, isn't it time to look at it and say, how do we fix something that shouldn't have been this way for the last 30 years?
Well, I think the city only gets involved if, in fact, it is a complete reconstruction of the road that's going to last between 20 and 30 years. Jack said 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, it's a county road, and the county should maintain it, and we should probably continue the lobbying effort. I did try and tell the people, because I still sit as the chair of the ICC, that 19 municipalities, my guess is 18 of them, other than Franklin, all want the same pot of money. And I know that in Oak Creek, 13th Street, that have been advocating for years that be road, that county road be fixed as well. So why are we, you know, why am I on this subject? Because we need to make a decision quickly, because the county needs an answer. And if we don't give them the answer, there's a great chance that those road dollars will go to other communities, and that road will not get fixed. And, you know, I've been fighting. Jim Bergman was fighting when he was the alderman. And I don't know how many county supervisors, if it was just Caesars or others, county executives have been given letters on this thing. And so we're at a point of doing it, but the whole issue, as far as what I'm hearing, turns on sidewalks.
Well, and if I may, I agree with you. I mean, I didn't hear anybody say they didn't want the road fixed. That's something everybody was in agreement on. I guess what I'm suggesting is the city needs to pick a policy issue, talk to their citizens, listen, and say, we feel it's essential for a walk, or we don't care. But if it's just a minor reconstruction, you're right. Let the county keep it.
Well,
but we have an opportunity to correct it and make it right.
I apologize if in fact, the Connectivity Committee has made recommendations regarding the sidewalks there, but I think that one of the purposes of the creation of that committee is to make a recommendation to both the Plan Commission and to the Common Council regarding the sidewalks.
We have not discussed it.
It was on an agenda, not with the time there weren't, I don't think the committee had detailed plans, but they did make a recommendation for the sidewalk being
put in. I guess I'd ask one other question, because I haven't taken my bike down that path that's behind the tennis courts. but a number of the comments that came in were, well, you already have a path, so why do you have to have a sidewalk?
Because the school won't unlock the gate. You cannot get from the bike trail to the back door of the school.
Well, isn't that a subject that I could take up with the superintendent? I mean, that's the first time I'm hearing that.
It's been my suggestion all along. The trail is there. It's underutilized. It would be safe for everybody moving from the south to get there. The trail is there, but they seem to have some security reason with it. It's a four-foot fence you could jump over, but they won't open the gate. My kids went there.
The south.
Can't get them to open the gate.
Kevin, that was from the south. I think the there were some people that I caught the tail end of the hearing. That there were people that talked about kids walking from the north. That would not do anything for them.
No.
So you still would have those folks trying to get to the Country Dale schools.
I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but I wrote a letter to the superintendent of Franklin Public Schools regarding the Franklin School Board, his position on the sidewalk and the road, North Cape Road. I don't know that, actually I had Joel pen a letter for me, and we sent it off, and I believe it's been received. Did we get any reply back? Maybe I should send another letter and ask about either setting up a meeting to discuss that other path with the locked gate or not locked gate. You might as well throw the dugouts in there.
And I just will say that we did discuss it briefly, and my suggestion was that all the members that could go to the public listening session and hear the comments, and my guess is we can have some dialogue on it at the next meeting.
Okay. I mean, I'll tell you.
But we hadn't seen a plan.
I remember having discussions with the fire chief about getting the hose getting into that area, and it was just forget it. We can't get the hose in from the hydrant. Never did make any sense. Fred?
The comments that I heard at the public meeting, everybody was not opposed to the sidewalk. They were always concerned about their trees. And when I talked to Steve Taylor, as the county representative there, I said, Steve, why don't you listen to the people? Can't you make the sidewalk go around the trees to save them? And he said, well, that's something that they can consider. And that was what I heard from the citizens, the people, especially Millie Perry. She lives there. She's got wonderful trees in the front
yard. She came here, though.
Yeah, and those would be gone with a straight sidewalk. But
well, and if I might clarify, because again, I hadn't had it, this is why I went and I looked at the plans. The alternative with the sidewalk actually has a narrower footprint. What kills the trees, or again, everybody I talked to was looking at their front yard, and some had more impacts than others with the different alternatives. What kills the trees is the ditches. When you rebuild the street, even if you just go two lanes, it needs to get a little bit wider. All the dishes get pushed. That's what kills the trees. If you go to the alternative that uses curb and gutter, you actually have a narrower roadway and then a terrace and then a sidewalk. So all the people that right now have ditches that flood and breed mosquitoes and all that, those ditches will be filled in. They'll be gone. They'll have flat front yards now and plenty of room to put in a sidewalk. So it's not really the sidewalk that's killing the trees. It's the ditches. The urban section is the one that has a greater footprint. Yep.
Mr. Bennett made that point very well at the county council meeting Tuesday evening, and it seemed to be to no effect.
Right.
So I'm not sure that the people accept that.
I agree. I personally sat there and talked to 5 to 10 of them, and we looked at their yards on both proposals, and it's different with each proposal, but we're not talking wholesale whacking of trees. I mean, most of the significant trees are actually on the other side of the road, and they'll be preserved and will actually end up better off if you did a curb and gutter.
Yep.
So it's individuals looking at their front yard, and I think the bigger issue that needs to be addressed is, do you feel it's important to have that sidewalk there from safety, because actually it has less impacts. Things will change, a shrub will go, but they'll actually have a much better and more usable front yard.
Well, again, I mean, the connectivity committee has actually been in place for a few years now. My recollection is there was a resolution that was passed by the Common Council that it is the policy, the direction of the Common Council, that whenever possible we should try and connect neighborhoods, schools, parks, and make Franklin a very connected community. So because there was some comments as to since when did you want to start building sidewalks, and actually it was a policy decision, and we have a resolution on file. So I guess just from my perspective, I would certainly welcome recommendations from the Connectivity Committee regarding this issue.
And we should have a specific agenda item for that, right, Nick?
I would suggest you ask to call the chair. Did the chair have to pick that up? Two members.
Sorry, on the agenda.
Take care of getting
and then, two members here.
Then my pet peeve, the hunger task force and the bike path. Is that done yet? You got the bike path in there?
I'm the one pulling it out.
Okay, because, you know, I got this short time span. I'd really like this. And then I'm going to get on my mountain bike. And
although I might be busy for a day or two with this thing that we talked about today.
Oh.
But it's not my short list. I keep trying to get to it, and it's something else.
I kind of wish Jack was here, because I remember the sidewalk on 51st Street going from north to Rawson. The concern there was always trees and other issues of eating up people's front yards. And that sidewalk is now apparently going in.
It's in.
No, up to a certain point, but now they're going to finish it all the way to Rawson. Right. I think that's not been complete yet. But that's going in. And I'll be interested to see what convinced the residents of that area who are adamantly opposed to that sidewalk.
Well, I do see this as an economic development issue. I think that this greatly enhances the reputation of the city. And when we're trying to attract businesses, we can tell them about what a fully connected community we have, and you know, it's going to be a sustainable community that will be able to go from here to there and jump on your bike. And
it's getting close. If you look at our maps, we're getting very close. And that developed sections of Franklin, all the major roads either have a bikeable shoulder, or now we'll be able, with the completion of 51st Street, we're going to begin to close in those areas. We still have to move to the north, up along College and some of those areas, but we're making progress.
Doug?
And clearly, Tuesday night, I mean...
I'm sorry, Alderman Schmidt.
You called me everything tonight.
Yeah. Not everything.
Yeah, not everything.
I was lucky earlier.
I'm very creative.
But, Tuesday night, well, we listened to over an hour of comments all in one direction. Just resurface the road, don't do anything to it, so... And otherwise, they're complaining to the common council. And are you listening to your residents? Because it's our street that we don't want to see anything cut down. So we really didn't get any full counterpoint to it.
I think we directed the staff to the city attorney to look at Trans 75. I was directed to talk to the state representative about using his good offices to talk to the Department of Transportation. My understanding, after talking to State Representative Skowronski, it's going to be hard to say, is that he has already begun to have many discussions. And then Jack whispered to me earlier in the evening that he's already had a discussion with Dwayne Johnson. So trying to cover the bases, but... I think there's all kinds of interpretations on Trans 75, depending on who you talk to. But one of the things I'm hearing right now is that there may not be state and federal money involved.
But we should still answer the question of whether we want to walk or not. That's a policy.
Well, I thought we answered that. I'm serious. The community, the city of Franklin has to
awesome. Yeah. Yeah, move to adjourn pretty soon. Before we do that, the scheduling of meetings. Sorry I have to do this, but it's very possible that I may have to ask for special meetings in the near future.
Mary Dalton does a good job of scheduling.
Well, and many of them.
So Thursday nights will be the night, or is it be a different night?
I don't know yet. Am I right, Joel, to do that?
Okay. Yeah. Here's her.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Moved. Second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nice have it.